This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Cherry Hill Volvo is honored to sponsor the Rich Zeoli podcast. We thank Rich for informing and entertaining all of us. Rich Zeoli, 1210 Talk Radio and Cherry Hill Volvo, an absolutely amazing team.
All right, we talk a lot about conspiracies on the show. We also talk about jokes a lot on the show. So when I saw this piece from Jesse Walker, from Antifa to UFOs, one joke can spawn 1,000 conspiracies, I thought it was great. And he's also really the master of conspiracy theories. He's the man who knows this better than anybody. So, Jesse, welcome to Philadelphia. This is going to be in the August-September 2020 issue of Reason Magazine. Conspiracy theories keep us going all the time, right? It's like one of those things that kind of unites us. Everybody, there's some we believe in, there's some we don't. First of all, do you agree with the premise that if you believe in one conspiracy theory, you tend to believe in all conspiracy theories?
No, I mean, there are people like that. But in general, almost everyone believes in at least one conspiracy theory. They might not call it a conspiracy theory because they, you know, believe in it. But it's not something that's like just for the fringe people who believe and if everything you know is wrong. If something sounds strange, they'll believe it. I mean, most folks have picked up one idea or the other that they're attached to. And that definitely doesn't mean you believe all of them.
When you wrote your book, The United States of Paranoia, A Conspiracy Theory, did you look into, I mean, is conspiracy something kind of rooted in us? Do we always feel like there's someone against us? Does that come from kind of the Revolutionary War, maybe, where we had the king against us all the time? Where does that come from?
Well, every country has their own version of this. My book is about the American experience, but I'm sure someone who read French could write a book about, you know, French conspiracy theories, and they'd find at least, well, almost as much as we have. But, you know, the American Revolution is definitely one of the sources. It can't be the only one, because I actually go back to the colonial days, and there were plenty of conspiracy theories then. But during the American Revolution, on one hand, a lot of the revolutionaries, they didn't just, you know, point to the very real things that Britain was doing that were threats to, you know, the liberties that the colonists had sort of acquired for themselves over the last century before then. But they believed that the British were plotting to impose absolute despotism. There were conspiracy theories at the heart of what a lot of the founding fathers believed. And then the flip side was a lot of the British had their conspiracy theories about the American rebels. They thought, you know, France was behind everything, pulling the strings, you know, imagining the French the way people imagine Putin and things like that today. So, I mean, in a lot of ways, and this is true of the Civil War, too, you look at both sides and they have these really intense and elaborate conspiracy theories about each other.
And then within the, like, even the founders, I mean, to this day, there's conspiracy theories about the symbols on money, right? Some of the founders of the different organizations that they were part of.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a whole genre of conspiracy theories about Freemasons and the American Revolution. And of course, you know, most people support the American Revolution. I mean, most people in America support the American Revolution. So a lot of these take the forms of the idea of a benevolent conspiracy that, you know, the Freemasons were behind it and that's good. Hooray, Freemasons. But you also have people who sort of see something a bit more demonic going on. And then one thing you often see is people who don't like the Freemasons, but they like the American Revolution. So they have to come up with some sort of way that the American Revolution, at this point it was good, but then the bad guys got in, or somebody was duped into being a part of this. So, you know, you start going down one rabbit hole and there's always further burrows that you can take and different people taking it in different direction.
And, you know, you point out that one joke can spawn 1,000 conspiracies. Was it ever settled? Did the former, I mean, late comedian Andy Kaufman, did he really not believe that we went to the moon, or was that just an act?
I would never try to make a definitive statement about what he believed at any given time.
So the verdict is still out there on that point. Yeah. But obviously, that's one of the more, I think, influential theories that's out there, that the moon landing was faked. And I, to be honest with you, if I was ever going to believe in a conspiracy theory, it would probably be that one, right? Because it seems like the most logical of something you could fake in a production studio, except for the fact that, you know, where's the guy who did the key grip and the electrician and the caterers? Why have they not come forward and talked about it yet?
Yeah, I think that would be one of the hardest ones to cover up. I mean, when you talk about how difficult it is to cover things up, the usual sort of counterexample people come up with, well, you know, the Manhattan Project, they managed to, all those people were involved and they kept it under wraps. And that's true, but, you know, they kept it under wraps for a couple of years and then the bomb went off. And I think that by now, if there were any serious, especially something as big as faking the moon landing, I mean, there are lots of little conspiracies you can cover up. You know, somebody bribes a congressman and then gets away with it. But faking several trips to the moon would be a bit more difficult than that.
The United States of Paranoia is the book, A Conspiracy Theory. Jesse Walker is the author. And his latest piece over at Reason Magazine, From Antifa to UFOs, One Joke Can Spawn a Thousand Conspiracies. I'm glad you're here to talk about it on the show. Now, in the modern day in which we're living right now with social media, there are jokes that are made and they spawn these conspiracy theories and hashtags start going and then the rest becomes history and winds up actually even directing segments on cable news shows. I mean, sometimes, and even you have pundits who get duped by what starts out as nothing other than somebody on social media who just wants to see if something will go viral, right?
Yeah, I mean, as you know, a big point of this article is to show that this isn't something that started with the social media age. It moves a lot faster then, and you can sort of figure out what's going on quicker because, you know, you can click through and go back to the original and find out that it's just some people joking around or sometimes deliberately, you know, starting a prank, but you can kind of figure out who's behind it, that they do pranks like this all the time. But some of the most famous and infamous conspiracy theories from the past, something similar happened even without, you know, without the internet there to help. I mean, one example, and this is one of the cases where someone was being a deliberate prankster, was a guy who wrote under the pseudonym Leo Taxel in France. And in the mid-1880s, he made this big, he had been sort of had a reputation as someone who was critical of religion and always criticizing the Catholic Church, because this was, you know, France in the 19th century. Catholicism was the big religion there. He made this big show of converting to Catholicism and renouncing his earlier writings and publishing these exposés that claimed that Freemasonry was controlled by this libertine and murderous satanic cabal based in Charleston, South Carolina. And he spent 12 years writing these and going around giving talks. He even got an audience with the Pope at one point before he called a press conference in 1897. And he said it was all a prank, and he gloated that so many Catholics had fallen for it. He gloated that some Masons had fallen for it because apparently he had tried to join the Masons and they wouldn't let him in. So he wanted to target them for this too. But the thing is that even today, you still see quotes from his exposés circulating in different conspiracy tracts. And there, people are either unaware that he said it was all a joke and shown that he'd been making it up, or they figure, well, no, that's the lie. I mean, this is always a problem when someone, you know, says I was kidding. You know, people say, well, what else are you kidding about? So there, you know, people saying that this was the truth was what he said during those 12 years, and the press conference at the end is. It was the part where he was lying. So, I mean, that's a case where someone was deliberately pranking. But there are other times when something is just sort of made as a joke and nobody even means for it to be believed. I mean, you see this when someone sends around an email article and it turns out to be something from The Onion or some site like that, and they didn't realize it was from a satire site. The most compelling explanation I've seen of the origin of birtherism is that it started with somebody making a joking hypothetical hypothetical situation in a comment section of a legal blog, and somebody taking it at face value and starting to spread it. That's not absolutely proven at the beginning because you don't know for sure where someone might have heard something, but the dates and the language match up. And of course, you know, birtherism, that's part of what sort of pushed Donald Trump back into politics. You know, there were real consequences of this guy just sort of joking around in a comment thread. So these things happen nowadays and they've happened in the past.
You also talk about, and there's a bunch of different societies and different groups and that sort of thing. I think America is fascinated with conspiracies. We love conspiracy movies. We've obviously always been obsessed with the shooting and the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. The umbrella, the infamous umbrella, is something that's amazing, right? And how one snapshot of something can create such lore. You really go into great detail in the article about the umbrellas and what they represented, and then of course the person who had the umbrella on the day that Kennedy was killed.
Yeah, so for people who haven't heard this, on the day Kennedy was shot, there's this weird bit. You can see it in the Zapruder film, this guy raising an umbrella, even though it's like it's not a rainy day, and putting it down, and people, you know, speculating, I mean, not unreasonably, saying, what could this be, a signal to the assassins? What was going on with this? And also some sort of more ridiculous speculations, with people thinking there was like a poison dart in the umbrella or something like that. As it turns out, in the 1950s and the early 60s, it was just sort of common for conservatives to mock politicians who they thought were soft on communism by bringing an umbrella to a public appearance. It was kind of a guerrilla theater thing. The umbrellas were supposed to represent Neville Chamberlain. Neville Chamberlain represents appeasement. People did not really sort of think of Kennedy as soft on communism, but his father had been an isolationist, and some people like to troll him by like showing up with umbrellas because they heard he really didn't like it. So this guy came to the protest with an umbrella to do this, and it was a sort of satiric gesture. It was a way of sort of mocking the president. 15 years later, you know, people have no memory or very little memory of what was going on, that this was like a thing that people did to protest politicians. And so you have all these speculations until he comes forward in the late 1970s and says, oh, that's me, and explains himself. Now, he told this in 1978. I first heard about the Umbrella Man more than a decade after that, like in college, talking about the Kennedy assassination with friends. Nobody said, oh, the guy came. I didn't hear about the explanation until more than a decade after that. It had just entered the folklore. And you can understand why. I mean, it really does seem mysterious for this to be going on the day that the president is killed. If you aren't familiar with, you know, this now long forgotten bit of right-wing protest.
Now, but then the government sort of aids conspiracy theories by, for example, you know, not releasing all the files around the Kennedy assassination, keeping them classified for 75 years and then extending the classification. I mean, so when people write books about there being a conspiracy around the assassination of Kennedy, for example, I mean, in some ways, the government fuels that because they just won't give us all the answers to the questions that so many people have. They won't release all the information, right?
To be clear, I'm not saying that all of the speculations about the Kennedy assassination comes from a joke. I'm saying that the specific Umbrella Man thing does.
Sure.
If a president dies, there's guaranteed. First of all, if a president dies, there's guaranteed to be conspiracy speculation because people are going to wonder what's behind it. That's happened with every presidential death. I mean, whether or not it's an assassination in American history, people don't remember the ones about, say, William Henry Harrison, but those, you know, there really were ones with him too. But beyond that, you're right that a lack of transparency definitely can fuel this stuff. And I think it's ridiculous that they haven't released all the files yet. They did finally release most of them. Was it 1 year ago, 2 years ago? I've lost all track of time ever since the lockdown started. But they still withheld some. And it has been more than half a century, and I think they should release it. And, you know, the people who are pressing for this, they include conspiracy theorists, they include conspiracy debunkers, they include people who don't really care so much about the conspiracy, they just want to have the documents because they're historians of the period. And I do not think there's a good reason not to have released them.
It seems like, again, to go back to a point you made earlier, somebody would have talked, somebody would have said something by now. It just seems impossible to keep a secret like that.
In this case, because in the Kennedy assassination case, there are people who have claimed to have been part of the assassination and, you know, quote unquote, come forward. Now, then there are reasons to doubt what they say. I'm not advocating any conspiracy theory here. I will just say that it's not as implausible as the faking the moonshot one,
sure.
which would really be difficult to keep everything under wraps.
You talk about pranks and accidents, and I want to ask you about enigmas in a second, too. But there's a group that really has piqued my interest in your piece. The Priory of the Scion. I think about a lot of the conspiracies around religion. And obviously, I mean, Dan Brown's books, which fueled massive bestsellers, international bestsellers, and then fueled, you know, major movies starring Tom Hanks. And there's been so many of these kind of, I mean, this genre continues to this day to be something that, people write books about. This group, allegedly age-old order that was in fact founded in France in the 1950s, right?
Yeah. I mean, some people basically fabricated some documents and then deposited them in the National Library of France. And then they worked with another writer to have him, you know, quote unquote, find them and use them as a basis for a book that came out in 1967 exposing the Priory of Scion. And then other esoteric writers built on that. And eventually, you know, Dan Brown came along, and other novelists have you know, I mean, like Robert Anton Wilson, Umberto Eco have you know used have drawn on this conspiracy theory in their fiction, and sometimes going into all sorts of weird directions you know, hidden treasures, Jesus Christ having kids, or possibly, if not Jesus, then the Merovingian kings being descendants of extraterrestrials. You know, all this going back to these people depositing this. And in this case, there's more than one person involved. I think a couple of them were definitely seeing it as a joke. I shouldn't say definitely, but, you know, like one of them had been a radio satirist. A couple of them were involved with surrealism. You know, you sort of just get the idea that they kind of thought they were doing some sort of puckish sort of performance art. On the other hand, one of the people, you know, really had this sort of desire to bring back the monarchy to France, and he may have had the idea that he could get himself crowned king of France by making it look like he is a descendant of this dynasty, and he also had like lots of nasty ideas about Jews and so on. So it was so in this case, I think some of the people behind it were kidding and not necessarily all of them. And that's something else that's worth bearing in mind, is that sometimes some people, for some people it's a joke, but from other people, even from the beginning, it's not.
And what would you classify as an enigma?
So I had these two categories of pranks, where people are deliberately trying to fool people, and accidents, where just sort of if someone makes a joke and they don't expect anyone to actually believe it. Enigmas is basically where I can't figure out which it is. Sometimes you just aren't sure. There was a document that was going around in 2017 called the Antifa Manual, which was supposedly you know, like it sounds, you know, a manual for the rules and the plans of people in Antifa. And if you read it, it's obviously fake. There's all this stuff in there that if you're at all familiar with Antifa literature, they would not be saying these things. But I cannot figure out, was it meant to fool people, or was it always meant as a satire? If it was meant as a satire, was it supposed to be a satire of Antifa, or was it supposed to be a satire of some of the weird things people believe about Antifa? I do not know. And this happens sometimes with the UFO literature. Actually, one of my favorite bits in here, and this is the one thing where I sort of branched out into something that was not a conspiracy itself, but it was so funny I had to throw it into the article. In 1961, a plumber in Wisconsin claimed that a UFO flew to his house, and a man exited the spacecraft and asked for some water, and then gave the plumber some pancakes and then left. And this is like one of those infamously weird UFO contact stories. And I can tell you, I'm pretty sure this did not happen. I do not think spacemen from the stars are bringing us pancakes.
Right.
But I do not know if this guy was a crazy dude who really thought that this happened, or was he pulling everyone's leg? Hard to tell. Was this a joke or was it not? I don't know.
And what about Q? That group, you know, it's a thinking that basically that within the government right now, there are people working to out basically all of the corruption, and any minute now, it's all going to be exposed, right?
Right. Yeah. And that's one where, although there is someone who is, you know, claiming to be this insider called Q, and is releasing these very hard to parse statements about what's supposedly going to go on. You know, early on, Q was making concrete predictions and they didn't come true. And then Q switched to making these sort of statements that people could construe any way they wanted to, so that he wouldn't, you know, they could then imagine that he was making accurate predictions. So I don't know that Q is a prankster. There's some people who have speculated that. I I think it's more likely that this person, I don't think Q is for real at all. I think it's a fraud. But I don't think it's necessarily a fraud meant for humor. But beyond that, though, most of the action in the sort of QAnon community is not coming from Q itself. It's from all these people trying to interpret what Q says and fit that in with what they're hearing elsewhere and building these elaborate and strange stories about the vast network of pedophiles running the country and Donald Trump is secretly cracking down on them, et cetera, et cetera. And I guarantee you some of the people doing this speculation are just trolling. It's not always easy to tell, you know, who is sincerely nutty, who is sincere and maybe just not very not nutty, but, you know, not very good at telling good evidence from bad, and who is just trying to wind people up. But some of those people are trying to wind people up, and parts of the QAnon story are almost certainly coming from people who are just, you know, being ridiculous online and not believing what they're saying.
Yeah, well said. Well, I definitely recommend your book. I just ordered it myself, The United States of Paranoia, A Conspiracy Theory. Jesse Walker, the author, and I'll post a link to this piece, which will be coming out in the next edition of Reason Magazine. From Antifa to UFOs, one joke can spawn 1,000 conspiracies. What happens when a prank or spoof sparks a real belief? Jesse, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate that.
Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.